So I think we just need to be clear that the purpose here isn't to write law, but to reiterate that the foundation is going to act in conformance with employment law.
May I be on the staff, Madam Chair?
Yes. Go ahead. And then after Lisa, we're going to move to the next one.
Okay, just a suggestion when you're talking with the attorney, because some of the things that Carolyn was raising just made me wonder if there's like a legal difference between retaliate and harassment, which are probably the same, but you know, sometimes there are nuances and stuff like that. So I would just like to maybe suggest, you know, when you talk to the attorney, to also, you know, ask about that, because definitely harassment should not happen either. And they might look like the same, but sometimes there's little technical little differences or whatever.
Okay. I made note of that one. Okie dokie. So can we move on now? Our secretary, you still with us, Madam Secretary?
Yep.
Okay. Reporting concerns. Okay. Carolyn, you take employees. Compound one, Carolyn.
Thank you. All right, employees. Employees should first discuss their concern with their immediate supervisor. If after speaking with his or her supervisor, the individual continues to have reasonable grounds to believe the concern is valid, the individual should report the concern to the Director of Human Resources. In addition, if the individual is uncomfortable speaking with his or her supervisor, or the supervisor is a subject of the concern, the individual should report his or her concern directly to the Director of Human Resources. Should I do the next paragraph as well?
There are two paragraphs in that one. My page is a little...
All right. If the concern was reported verbally to the Director of Human Resources, the reporting individual, with assistance from the Director of Human Resources, shall reduce the concern to writing. The Director of Human Resources is required to promptly report the concern to the chair of the audit committee, who has specific and exclusive responsibility to investigate all concerns. If the Director of Human Resources, for any reason, does not promptly forward the concern to the audit committee, the reporting individual should directly report the concern to the chair of the audit committee. Contact information for the chair of the audit committee may be obtained through the HR department. Is there someone on the call here?
One second, Karen. Could someone please do pound one?
Concerns may also be submitted anonymously. Such anonymous concerns should be in writing and sent directly to the chair of the audit committee.
Okay, now, one second, just to let you know, this I took from Sarbanes-Oxley AICPA. So,
from where, please? I'm sorry?
The AICPA. That's what they suggested. So, if you want to quarrel with AICPA, not me. Anybody has any concerns? Speaking of concerns.
I'm sorry, we finished the paragraph?
Yes. That was it. It was a long section.
I must have went to sleep a moment.
Does anybody have any concerns?
Well, again, Carolyn, yes. Sorry about that.
This is a new concern, Carolyn?
It is. We don't have an HR director, for one thing, and I don't know how this overlaps. It's from the AICPA, but how does this overlap with non-financial complaints or complaints that are combined with the complaints about harassment or other issues? I think my problem is that the mechanism is restricted to financial complaints, and it's only through the audit committee. I think we need to give people some wiggle room. If it's a mixed bag, they don't want to come just to audit. They may want to go directly to the PMB or to personnel or to another committee that's supposed to handle, you know, that sort of thing.
Carolyn, I don't know if your phone phased out. This complaint is specifically for financial complaints.
My point is that I don't think we can divide them like that. I guess, long story short, I don't think it's possible to restrict complaints that finally.
Okay. Also, this is a policy for whether or not we have an HR person. We can't do it because there's no HR person. Then when an HR person gets hired, that we do it. But my goal here is to have this, like as Evelyn said, or Jack, I'm beginning to forget now. We need this policy. What should happen when there is some financial impropriety that someone observes and wants to complain? The other thing, I'm also on governance. I think Tracy's on governance with me. We had started a code of conduct, and of course we couldn't get quorum, so that fell off by the wayside. This is specifically for financial complaints. I'm not entertaining anything that is non-financial. Okay? Does anybody else want to be on the staff?
This is Tracy from KPFA at some point.
Okay. Did I hear Well, hold on a second. Did I hear Lisa, Evelyn, and then Tracy?
Uh-huh.
Or am I
here? This is Stacy from KPFT, and I'd like to be on the stack.
Okay. So it's Lisa, Tracy, and Stacy?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. I have two things here so far. Hold on 1 second. The Director of Human Resources is required to promptly report the concern to the Chair of the Audit Committee, and then which has specific and exclusive responsibilities to investigate all concerns. I just want to be a little clarity here. Do you mean the Chair of the Audit Committee that has that, or is it the Audit Committee that has the responsibility to investigate all concerns or exclusive responsibilities?
Sorry, Lee. Sorry. Go ahead.
Right.
Sorry.
Now, I hear it says the Chair of the Audit Committee, which has specific and exclusive responsibility to investigate all concerns. And I just wanted to know for clarity if that is the Chair of the Audit Committee or is it the Audit Committee?
Well, you notify the Chair, and the responsibility to investigate, the Chair, of course, will bring it to the Audit Committee because it said earlier in the document that's what the Audit Committee does. But if you want to be clearer, I can fix what they have here. I don't have an issue.
I was just going to make a friendly suggestion to just add who shall in turn report it to the audit committee. Just for clarity. And then my next question is, after we say that such anonymous concerns should be in writing and sent directly to the chair of the audit committee. Oh, this is, I just had, pertain to the HR director. Should there be, if the HR director submits something to the chair or to the audit committee, or to the chair rather, should there be something in writing from the audit committee to the HR director acknowledging receipt of the complaint or concern?
Okay, I could add that. But does anybody have an issue with those two things? First, let me fix this, where is this now?
Responsibility. No, that's fine.
Okay. The AICP is not always correct, right? I figure I'll go to the source.
And then I just had one other little short thing that we might want to think about. If they are submitting a report to the audit committee in writing, how that should be submitted? I mean, would the email be sufficient, or should there be something submitted certified now if something is at the level of being a formal complaint? Just something to think about.
Okay, that's further down in the paragraph, right, Lisa? Just steer me to it so I can type it in red. Those concerns should be in writing.
Right, hold on 1 second. Might be jumping the bed a little bit because I'm hold on. Contact from the chair may be obtained through the human concerns may also be submitted anonymously. Yeah, I guess I'm just asking a question. I didn't necessarily see a specific point right now which be put, but just in general, if complaints if something rises to the level of a formal complaint, how should that complaint be submitted? Should be submitted in writing? Would email suffice? And I just know that when I was looking at something else through Robert's rules, it seemed like it implied that formal complaints should be submitted. But I might be jumping to the gun, but that's just a question to think about how they should be submitted.
Well, it says in general it should be submitted in writing. So if it's mostly everybody does email these days.
Oh, okay.
I guess if you have That means that they would need the audit committee's chair's home address. They wouldn't just send it like that.
Right, just something I was, just something to think about.
Okay, what do you guys think? You think we should just leave it in general in writing, or do I need to be more specific?
I don't think it needs to be more specific.
Oh, okay.
For what it's worth.
Does everyone agree with that? I didn't hear anybody else, Tracy. Okay, Tracy, you're next on the staff.
Okay.
Okay, it's Tracy, Stacy, and then Evelyn. Okay, Tracy.
I'll be as fast as I can, and this is sort of a devil's advocate argument. I'm not entirely convinced that I'm right, but in looking at the two paragraphs, this one and the one that follows, it seems like we have a fairly direct process for directors and other volunteers. They submit concerns in writing directly to the chair of the audit committee, which then can vet. And we've set up many other steps for employees through the supervisor, then through HR, then HR to audit. That's
Hello?
My question is whether we're putting up too many barriers to employees reporting concerns, and something like the following paragraph would be more direct. And I could be totally wrong about that. I'm just putting it out as a devil's advocate argument, because the employee reporting mechanism is very long and very complicated. The director and other volunteer mechanism is very quick and very straightforward. And is that what we want, and is that a good idea? It's a very open question, and if you give me good reasons why I'm wrong, I'll totally forget all about it. But I just want to put it out.
No, you're not wrong. Well, what I can see here, when it says director, since we're the governance body,
mm-hmm.
the local station boards and the PNB, I think ours should definitely be more direct.
Okay.
No pun intended, directors. For the staff, the HR person. So that would, because that person has a supervisor, right? Sometimes. Sure. You might have two levels of management within a station. So that's why I think they laid it out that way. Does anybody disagree with what I have to say, or? No? Okay. Did you have something else, Tracy, or that's it?
That was it.
Okay. Stacy and then Evelyn.
And can I be on the staff again, Madam Chair?
Yes. Stacy?
Hello? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just becoming increasingly concerned that this is redundant and that it's already spelled out in the California Code, and that if we want a document to tell people what to do if they have a financial complaint, because I believe we wrote some things about retaliation into the bylaws when we wrote them in the first place. I'm starting to agree with Carol and wonder why we're doing this. I wonder if I'm not making a movement that we scrap this until we've had a lawyer look at it and decide if it's the right thing to do, because I don't want to waste my time.
Okay.
I'm making a motion.
And I certainly don't want to waste your time. However, I think if you think it's a waste of your time and you choose to stay, you may stay, but I would like to complete this document and then I will check after. So I would respectfully ask you
the problem is that we're not only reading the document right now, we're also modifying it as we're reading it.
Yes. Okay. And when I check with the lawyer, we're going to have another meeting. So your point is well taken. I will come back with the information, and then the entire body will take a look at it and decide what do we want to do. Okay?
Well, if there's not
Evelyn?
A second, then there's not a second.
Evelyn?
When we had to deal with a whistleblower complaint, there was no document, there was nothing in place for us to have a starting point, to even know how to deal with it in the manner that is required by California Code. Because we're all scattered all over the United States, some of us don't think California Code. initially. And in Texas, they don't have, you know, all their laws are different from everything in the United States. So, you know, it really helps to have a starting point to know how to deal with or where to initially begin the process and to have convenient for directors. And please don't rush me. I didn't interrupt you, so please don't interrupt me. Okay? And, you know, I don't want to be on the call all night either, but I think part of what's missing from the stuff we do is not really knowing what we're doing and how to get it done quickly. And the process of putting procedures in place that are handy and easily accessible is really a good idea.
Okay. Anyone else, or to move to directors and other volunteers? Stacy, are you still with us? Stacy?
Yes, I'm still with you.
Okay. Would you like to do the next two paragraphs?
I don't have a computer in front of me.
Okay. Who, Lisa? Are you by your computer? Or are you?
I'm right here. I can do it. Thank you.
All right.
So you want next paragraph? Okay. Directors and other volunteers. Directors and other volunteers should submit concerns in writing directly to the chair of the audit committee. Contact information for the chair of the audit committee may be obtained from the chief financial officer.
And I know to fix that, right? No, there's nothing. Any concerns with that one?
May I be on the staff, Madam Chair?
Yes. Go ahead. Go ahead.
My concern is a little similar to what I had
one
before.
One second, Lisa. Could someone please mute? How about one? Thanks. Go ahead, Lisa.
My concern is a little similar to the one I expressed before when we said volunteers, but maybe I don't even need to say it if they're going to have employees/volunteers on the other one. But I just know that there is, even within the word volunteer, there are different kinds of, you might have people volunteering to be on the committees of the LSV committees, which would be one kind of volunteer. And then you might have somebody who might actually, even where you have unpaid staff, that might still be considered a volunteer at the station, and that something, let's say something happens at the station with that volunteer. And if it's a situation where a volunteer is doing something that specifically pertains to the station, they're on the site and stuff like that, if there was an issue that happened there, would that volunteer go to the HR director or?
Absolutely.
It depends on whether it's financial.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying, because here we have directors and other volunteers, so I was just saying maybe we need to have a little clarity, because you could have a volunteer that could be at a committee of the LSB, like on the programming committee or something like that, and something that could happen, and that would kind of be like a volunteer that works with the board, and then you could have somebody, a volunteer, who could be at the station doing something for a couple of hours, and something happens, and they feel the need to report it. So, and then that volunteer is reported to the HR director. Do you see what I'm asking with the difference here?
Yes. Obviously, a volunteer in the programming committee is not financial. So we're to limit it to the volunteer within a station that says volunteering in the business office, and something happens in the business office that he or she wants to report.
Okay. So they would then report it to the HR director, right?
Yes. Yeah, they need to let somebody know.
Okay. Because, you know, because we have here, hold on one second, because this is under the section for directors and other volunteers. I'm just saying I think there just needs to be a little differentiated. Thank you very much.
Differentiation. Okay.
Right.
So
it might be a volunteer who's working at the station, or, you know.
Okay.
Just a friendly suggestion.
Right, but this is for financial. So wherever the volunteer is and comes in contact with any financial impropriety, that's what this is for.
It's not general.
Susan, just wait to be called on, please. It's just a little less disruptive. Go ahead, Lisa.
No, I mean, I understand that, but sometimes, you know, something could, you know, like even if you had a volunteer, like with the finance committee or something like that. You know, I'm just saying.
Don't know what you wanted to say, Lisa.
Well, I was just saying, I think we need to distinguish between kinds of volunteers, because this comes under directors and other volunteers that should report it to the board, but there would be some volunteers, if it happened at the station, that should report it to the HR director, in other words. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Just put, I'll work with that, because it's 10:04, and I don't want folks to get breathless. I'd like to finish this.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And then I can work. I just want to make it close, and then I'll fix it. Anybody else has anything there?
Well, Carolyn on the stack, again, I'd like to suggest that the should be changed to or encouraged to, rather than make it obligatory, because there may be reasons why some people do not want to submit concerns to the audit committee, even if it's a mixed bag and includes financial improprieties and as well as others, or for some reason they don't want to submit to the audit committee. I think that's might be quite legitimate. We don't know. So I don't want to say that they can't, if they don't submit it to the audit committee, it doesn't go anywhere. That doesn't seem correct to me.
Okay. Okay. All right. Lisa, can you do the next?
I'm sorry. Okay, sure. Handling of reported violations. The audit committee shall address all reported concerns. The chair of the audit committee shall immediately notify the audit committee, the foundation's chair, the executive director, and chief financial officer of any such report. The chair of the audit committee will notify the sender and acknowledge receipt of the concern within 5 business days. If possible, it will not be possible to acknowledge receipt of anonymously submitted concerns. All reports will be promptly investigated by the audit committee, and appropriate corrective action will be recommended to the board of directors if warranted by the investigation. In addition, action taken must include a conclusion and or follow-up with the complainant for complete closure of the concern. The audit committee has the authority to retain outside legal counsel, accountants, private investigators, or any other resource deemed necessary to conduct a full and complete investigation of the allegations. And this is where I believe Jack added a recommendation, which says, following review for financial impact and approval by the National Finance Committee and CMB.
Okay.
Tracy, on the stack, please.
Okay, Tracy.
Sorry, Jack, you're going to feel like I'm picking on the 2 changes that you made, and I am, and I'm sorry, but I think that needs to be rethought. First, because the law would be that we need to conduct a full and complete investigation of the allegations, period. And secondly, I think there's a hypothetical scenario there where if the complaint is per se against a CFO, you would have a CFO participating in the National Finance Committee and basically getting to lobby for a less full and complete investigation of the allegations, and I think you've got to watch out for that kind of conflict of interest. So I think that the audit committee, while you may want to keep the PNB in there, I don't think you can put the National Finance Committee and give it checks and balances authority over how full and complete an investigation is. So for me, that doesn't work.
But Tracy, I can guarantee you that if it were the CFO, the CFO would not be part of the National Finance Committee call.
Well, I mean, In good faith, I believe you, but I'm concerned about the way it's written, to tell you the truth.
Okay. So how would you like to see it written?
I
or
would
anybody,
like,
for that matter, who's on the National Finance Committee, the person would not be there.
I would, Well, you're asking me what I would like. I would like the wording to be as it was without the addition. That the Audit Committee has the authority to retain outside legal counsel, accountants, private investigators, or any other resource deemed necessary to conduct a full and complete investigation of the allegations. Period.
But I can tell you from my 10 months of being on the PNB and being around here for a little while, you do need to do a financial impact. So I understand Jack's sentiment, so I would really like to keep that in there. Because we can't just go out and just, for example, the idea of the forensic audit came up tonight.
Uh-huh.
Sure, I could find you a whole heap of them, but they're going to cost money. I can't just bring them in and say, let's do it, because it has to be budgeted. And
Carolyn,
that's
on the stack.
Can
Lisa get on the stack?
Yeah, Carolyn on the stack, please.
Yeah. I want to make sure that, Tracy, do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. I still have concerns. Maybe we should listen to the rest of the stack and then I'll...
Okay. Carolyn, then Lisa.
Yeah, I think Tracy's point is well taken. In fact, the financial impact statement is redundant because we already have a requirement to have a financial impact statement. So I don't think that even has to be there. And I kind of agree that the NFC is just yet another layer of bureaucracy that could be used to stifle or delay. And sooner or later, we'll have to go to the PNB. So why two committees? Either the Audit Committee or the NFC should go to the PNB. But I don't think two committees for the PNB. I think that really is sort of a layer of bureaucracy that is just a delaying mechanism. Whatever the good intentions were, I think the effect would be to just channel it back and forth and bounce it between the two committees. What if they disagree? Then where does it go? So I would agree with Tracy that maybe that entire addendum, although well-intentioned, should be removed.
Let me ask you a question, Kat. So who would do the financial impact?
Well, the financial impact, I think we passed a resolution, the PNB, didn't it, that anything submitted to the PNB has to be accompanied by a financial impact statement?
If it's over 10% of what the budget
well,
is.
Well, that's fine then. Let's leave it at that. Why mess with that? I mean, we've got to... Let's not keep reinventing the wheel here.
Okay. Lisa?
I was going to just recommend some change in the language, which might be agreeable to everybody. You could have the allegations following review for financial impact and approval of the PNB, or following review for financial impact by the National Finance Committee and the approval of the PNB.
Yeah, better language. I agree.
Okay. Does everybody agree with that? Any objections to that?
Sorry, could you repeat that again, please?
My proposed language was following review for financial impact by the NFC and approval of the PNB.
So just one quick question. This is Tracy, and this is just clarification because I'm not on the PNB. So the review for financial impact has to be prepared by the NFC. It couldn't be prepared by the Audit Committee itself.
No.
It wouldn't
has to
do
be
that.
NFC.
Okay.
Oh, Carolyn, on the stack here, that's not the way it's been done. Generally, we went to the CFO or someone and asked or did it ourselves and then submitted the financial impact statement with the document. I don't see why the NFC has to be involved in this.
Anybody else here on the Finance Committee? I don't, as far as I know, the NFC prepares the financial impact. I've never heard of it being done the other way around.
May I say
something?
I think, and especially when we're dealing with something like this, which seems like it could get kind of costly if we're talking about potential private investigators and things like that might, you know, take up more time, that with that kind of finance, I think it would be a good idea to have the National Finance Committee review it, because they're the ones that would supposedly also be thinking about the finances in a whole, whereas sometimes we might be thinking, okay, well, yeah, this will only cost this much, but they would kind of be looking at the finances in a whole. So I see no problem with at least submitting it for their review. That way they can say, oh, wait a minute, no, we got this big other thing coming up. This could be a problem. So I think so, with any kind of very large, potentially large financial project.
Do I hear Jack back
yes.
there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jack.
Thank you. I really like Lisa's wording. I think I had considered something like that and just came out with what I came out with. It was the last thing I had in my brain. But I really, the reason I included, as soon as I read that paragraph, I thought this will never fly without a financial impact and approval by the PMB, because I don't think a committee is going to ever get the authority to start spending money on lawyers, accountants, and private investigators without some kind of oversight mechanism. It may slow things down a little bit. I can't see it happening any other way. I think it's only realistic to include this wording, and I really like Lisa's suggestions, so I hope we
okay,
can
Lisa.
That.
Anybody else have anything they want to say? Then I'm going to go to Lisa so we could get going here.
You're coming back to me?
You're saying following, could you repeat what you
said? Do you want me to repeat that?
Yes, please.
Following review for financial impact by the National Finance Committee and approval by the PNB.
Yeah, that's better. Agreed.
Okay. Everyone's good with that, it sounds like, right? Who else is left that on the call that hasn't read anything?
Susan. Yeah, where are we?
You have the anchor leg, kiddo.
Okay, so that's acting in good faith?
And confidentiality, yep.
Okay, acting in good faith. Anyone reporting a concern must act in good faith and have reasonable grounds for believing the information disclosed indicates an improper accounting or auditing practice or a violation of the code. The act of making allegations that prove to be unsubstantiated and that prove to have been made maliciously, recklessly, or with the foreknowledge that the allegations are false will be viewed as a serious disciplinary offense and may result in discipline up to and including dismissal from the unpaid position, termination of employment, or removal from local or national board in accordance with the foundation's bylaws. Such conduct may also give rise to other actions, including civil lawsuits. Want me to go on with the next paragraph?
If no one has any concerns.
Confidentiality. Reports of concerns and investigations pertaining thereto shall be kept confidential to the extent possible, consistent with the need to conduct an adequate investigation. Disclosure of reports of concerns to individuals not involved in the investigation will be viewed as a serious disciplinary offense and may result in discipline up to and including termination of employment, dismissal from unpaid position, or removal from local or national board. Such conduct may also give rise to other actions, including civil lawsuits.
Okay. I have...
Go ahead, Lisa.
I have a question. When we say civil lawsuits, we mean civil lawsuits against the individual. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
The only reason that I'm asking this, and I'm not proposing any language or anything like that, is I thought one time I heard the attorney talking about indemnification against like board members and stuff like that. So I would just suggest maybe getting some clarity about under what circumstances is a board member indemnified if, you know, something happens, and under what circumstances are they not?
I have an idea, but I don't remember exactly. I don't know. Jack and Evelyn can be, not can be, could they be discreet about something?
Jack.
Go ahead.
I think the standard that we've gotten from counsel is good faith. As long as you're acting in good faith, looking out for the best interests of the foundation, you're indemnified. If it can be demonstrated that that's not the case, that your actions are malicious and subject the foundation to liability, then I believe you would not be indemnified.
Oh, okay.
That's right. That's exactly what my recollection was. When I wrote that, that's what I thought, but I just wanted to, you know. Anybody else?
On the stack again? Yeah. Again, this is overkill. This is already covered in law and in precedents and so on. And for us to write this is just to write another level of conflict with law that already exists. Directors who, in fact, bring directors' lawsuits against the foundation or against fellow directors are covered until someone proves that they have acted maliciously. You know, it's already all there. So I don't understand why we need to restate the obvious. It's in the law. It's in case law. It's covered. It's our bylaws covered to some extent. And as Jack said, they're indemnified. This raises the bar. So instead of allowing directors to bring concerns to the board, it forces them to file a director's lawsuit in order to make sure that they're indemnified. That just raises the ante. I think this is just looking for trouble myself. So I would really like to strike those both of those paragraphs.
Anyone else has any different comments?
This is Tracy from KPFA. I would add in the confidentiality clause, I would add proven disclosure of whatever it says. And I don't have it in front of me right this second, because a proven disclosure is different than a rumored disclosure. And I think you should add that bar before putting in the disciplinary action.
I would like to second the motion.
About the proven?
Okay. Wait, no, the motion that Carol made.
Okay. So speaking of overkill, I mean, we have, Carol has said that over and over and over, so I am fully aware of that. Tracy, I just, for some reason, I was concentrating on reading a sentence, and I lost what you
said. No idea what I just said, in other words. What I'm suggesting adding a word in confidentiality in the second paragraph. Before closure, I'm suggesting a word proven disclosure. And the reason that I'm doing that is that on the good faith clause, we're using the word proven when we're using words like maliciously, recklessly, and blah, blah, blah. And I think we should also use proven disclosure of reports of concerns to individuals not involved in the investigation.
I'm looking for proven in acting in good faith. With a less than...
It's in this sentence. The act of making allegations that prove to be unsubstantiated and that prove to have been made maliciously, recklessly, or with foreknowledge that the allegations are false. So we're setting up a bar that things need to be proven before they are viewed as serious disciplinary offenses. And I think with confidentiality violations, we should use the same bar. So it should be proven disclosure of reports of concerns to individuals not involved in the investigation.
I'm trying to figure out. Maybe I'm just getting a little tired here. So when you read this sentence, proven disclosure of reports of concerns to individuals not involved in the investigation will be viewed as a serious disciplinary offense and may result in dismissal. I'm trying to figure proven disclosure. Does anybody have a problem with that?
Jack.
I don't really quite get that. Go ahead, Jack.
You know, I don't have a serious objection to it. I think it's superfluous.
And
it's sort of, I don't know, I don't know if it raises the bar, if it just seems unnecessary.
Jack?
Can you hear me?
Jack?
Yes.
Oh, you timed out there on my end. I didn't hear you.
I tuned out. It just seems, I mean, I don't know what it adds. It seems unnecessary. I'm sort of with you, Nia. I don't know why we would put it in, but I don't have any great objection to it being there. I think both of these paragraphs are acting in good faith and confidentiality are very, very important. They couldn't be repeated enough in this organization because of so many frivolous allegations that are made and sometimes prove to be utterly unfounded. I don't know. I just want to echo Nia's feeling that the word is unnecessary, but I wouldn't, you know, raise a serious objection to it.
Okay.
Question here, point of information?
Go ahead, Carolyn.
Is it possible that that if someone makes an allegation and it's proven to be false, that they could, because it's proven to be false, be accused of acting frivolously? Or is there another standard for deciding frivolous?
Well, listen, there's one thing about financial complaints. See, you can't fool the numbers. I've been around numbers a long time, and even if you trick them, when you do a thorough investigation, you are going to find out if your debits truly equal your credit. So I don't, maybe I'm too financial-minded, so maybe somebody else. I don't get that.
I remember Ross Wisdom explaining to us once. We asked him if there were problems with the audit. And he said, as auditor, he wasn't doing a forensic audit. As auditor, he could tell if the numbers added up. Now, he said if someone was cooking the numbers, he could not tell that. That was not his job, and that's not the kind of audit he was running. So if someone thinks that the numbers are being cooked, and wants an investigation to find out, and it turns out that they're wrong, but they acted in good faith because the numbers seemed funny. Does that mean de facto that they are then acting in bad faith because they turned out to be wrong? I mean, that is a problem.
No. Trust me, I've been in the business for a long time. I can tell when, and I know Evelyn as an auditor by trade. I mean, not to say everyone here is an auditor. You can tell instinctively when something isn't right before even looking at the numbers. They're just very quick things you could take a look at. But that required a whole training, and I can't, I have a minor in accounting, so that I can't do that on the phone tonight. But if someone's acting in good faith, sure, you're not going to be penalized for that. Do I hear Lisa and Evelyn? Who am I hearing? Lisa,
yeah, I just want to get back on the stack a moment.
Ahead,
I just
want
to say that overall, I think to have this kind of document, and I hope that Pacifica will hurry up and get just in general a procedure in place for code of conduct and people reporting other kind of complaints. But it's really important to have something like this, you know, in writing for the employees and the people who work with the foundation. Just real quickly, I know where I work, and although there's New York law and employment law and all this kind of stuff, they have booklets, they have manuals, they even have online training that employees have to check off that they saw things pertaining to compliance. Because first of all, employees are not lawyers. They're not going to be going to California law to read things. And also, it also serves as a safeguard against the foundation. If ever, for whatever reason, there's lawsuits, I don't even want to say that word, but any complaints against the foundation, we can at least say, look, here are manuals, here are compliance that we wrote out, things that we made sure that our employees knew. So that would just, that acts as an extra safeguard for the foundation to make sure that their employees and people who work with the foundation are very much aware of these guidelines.
It also does a couple of things also. When you give this kind of document out to your employees, to, you know, management, it makes them understand that you are aware and that you are focused on opening up channels so that you can deal with problems when they come up, and that you're also paying attention. You know, when you go in and there are no procedures, there are no manuals, there's no, you know, personnel policy, everything is just kind of felt that it's kind of slipshod. But when you have a process and you're able to give your employees that, it really puts them on notice. And as well as, you know, putting a line of protection out there for whoever needs to file a complaint, it tells them what the process is. That's just the basics.
Yep. Well, thank you, Evelyn. And that's why I said, you know, well, Evelyn went a bit further. You know, there was an incident, and there was absolutely nothing. And I'm the type of person, if I'm leading a committee, I like to do lessons learned. I don't like to just go through the motions of, you know, doing what I have to do, and then, okay, it's over and done with. Okay, what's going to happen when the next person becomes the chair of the audit committee or whosoever comes on the national board? We as directors and as local station board members, we have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the organization is being run smoothly, and we, you know, we're living up to the best of our potential. That's how I look at it. I don't see how this could be rejected in any way, shape, or form. It's according to the AICPA rules. I took some of it, I put it on my own, you know, as you can tell. And like Evelyn said, it's a good something to have. Okay, this is what we're supposed to do, not just shooting in the dark. You know what I mean? Okay, so I won't repeat what Evelyn said. Think of Carolyn said overkill, so I'm not going to overkill. So we're done with this. I have my my marching orders as to what to do in terms of checking with legal and Tony Pohl and all that, and then I will get back with you all. I would really like to have this done before the year is over. This is October. So let's schedule a meeting. That's our next item, which is schedule the next meeting.
Do you want me to go to the KPFT calendar?
Yeah, I'm gonna put. I think some folks just left.
And Nia, just one last thing before we take off. This is Tracy with BFA. I thought about it. I would like to keep request for the proven disclosure language if pending.
Okay. I'm sorry, Tracy. Proven disclosure. What do you mean? Just elaborate. What saying what? I want to make sure I'm not making any.
The word change that I had wanted to make of inserting a proven prior to disclosure in the confidentiality paragraph, I would just like to keep that request.
Okay.
That's all.
Nobody objected to it.
No.
Oh. I'll just put it in.
Okay.
Okay. Now, my last, I will be gone for a while here. Huh. Today is the 14th. I'm looking at this calendar. I cannot do anything until after the 27th.
On October?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because tomorrow is the 15th, governance is 16th. It have a meeting. Governance is tomorrow. I think Tracy and I are on governance. Friday we have a P&G subcommittee meeting. There's nothing on the 20th that's here. I don't know if I could get back to. I can try for the 20th.
I can't do it on the 20th. Not that it necessarily matters, but I can't do it. This
I'm
is
afraid there are already two meetings on the 20th, the Elections Committee postponement, and,
okay,
and
you guys,
I think Mike just called an NFC meeting, I believe, for the 20th.
You guys got to put these things up here. You guys always mess us up.
Got to put them on the calendar. Oh, wait, no, the Elections Committee was postponed on the 20th, that's true. But I think Mike just called an NFC meeting for the 20th, I saw somewhere today.
Okay.
Yeah, but there shouldn't be any. Oh well, I guess there is. If directors want to attend the NSC, there is overlap.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't consider with NSC because I do need to. I'm just visiting. I know it's a conflict of interest for audit committee members to be on finance. I'm not going to. I'm just going to visit. I would like to
hear what's going on.
Yeah. Then on the 21st is archives. I don't like overlapping with committees. 22nd is now. So the only time that I'll be able to do it is the 27th.
Which is Monday.
I can't do it on the 27th.
That's a possibility for elections committee rescheduling, too. We haven't decided yet. There are three dates out there, but I know the 27th is one of them.
Could we go for the first week of November? I don't want to delay things, just realistically. Me,
as long as it's not November the 4th, okay?
Okay. Let me just say this, guys. I have to call a special meeting of the PNB in order to approve the document. I also have a checklist that I wanted to do, but I was too tired. See, I started the cells, and I just, I was tired. I'm not going to lie, I was tired. So we have to do that. Then I have to give a special notice to the PNB to call a special meeting to approve what we just did. So I would like, how about the 29th?
29th is Wednesday. That's good by me.
That's an LSB meeting, too, with DAI.
Which LSB?
Well, they haven't.
There's an LSB meeting on the 15th and the 29th, Carolyn?
It was proposed. I don't know that it was scheduled or noted.
We didn't approve anything.
Both dates were proposed, and I know the 15th is firm. That's going to happen tomorrow night. I think the 29th is still on the schedule, though. I'm not sure.
You have the three of us here, and two of us do it on the 29th. Okay, how about the 30th?
Well, I have to get off the call, so may I suggest a poll by email? I know you want to do it tonight, but some people have already.
30th.
I would even.
How about the 30th?
That may work.
I have no problem with the 30th.
Okay, folks, the 30th. That's it. Okay, Lisa?
Yes?
Could you please put an NFC for the 20th and our thing for this and audit for the 30th?
Okay, you said now you just said audit for the 30th, right? I thought I heard you say something about NFC, but you mean audit. Okay.
20th
for
NFC.
Yeah, I'm confused.
Okay.
You want to put both dates on the calendar.
Right.
Okay, so the 20th is NFC. Hold on.
Right. And then the 30th is audit.
I'm with this person. Okay.
Yes.
20th is NFC. Okay. I'll put it in. Don't worry about it. As soon as something comes up, I'll put it
in. And Carolyn, is Carolyn still with us?
Yes.
Could you please tell that committee to please put them on the calendar?
Yeah, definitely. But the NFC does have a secretary, so if it's not up there yet, it probably hasn't been finalized.
If he sent an email, it's probably final. They just didn't put it.
Yeah,
on
you
the
just
calendar.
Said that he sent an email.
Well, I think it was a query. I'm not sure that it was, you know, a firm announcement. So I'm not going to take responsibility for that. I'm not even
on
the committee.
Fine. You want me to call Mike, and if it's there, I'll put it on the calendar.
Good idea.
Evelyn.
I'll call Martin as the secretary, however. I would suggest checking with him.
Ev?
Yes.
Save yourself there. Let me just go to my mail and see.
Thank you.
It looks like an announcement to me.
Okay, so Jack just looked. Did you just read your mail, Jack?
It says, attached is the October 20, 2008 agenda. This will be executive session, so make sure and keep the dial in numbers, blah, blah, blah.
Okay,
that's
good.
That sounds like a firm
pretty clear.
To me. The PIN numbers are the same for all of them, right? I mean, for all these committees,
yes,
right?
The phone number is the same. As long as you have it in there, let's...
Well, I'm going to put them in there, so hold on. So the 20th and the 30th, okay.
20th is NFC, 30th is audit.
And because it's executive session, you really don't have to put the numbers in there?
I don't, not even for the streamers?
It's not going to be streamed, it's executive session.
I'm sorry, hello.
No, you're not, you just... Sorry for the interruption of service. For those who are listening, our next audit committee meeting would be October 30th. And could I get a motion to adjourn? First, I want to thank you guys very, 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 very much. The wonderful committee in the PNB. Thank you so much. Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Bye.
Good night, all.
Good night. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Good night, Gracie.
Good night, Double.